combine business.
My business.
With pleasure.
Damn, that sounds sexy.
No funny business, no conversation.
And now, back to America's business coach, Coach Ron Tunick.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank and sitting in for Coach Ron Tunick, who is away in Las Vegas speaking to a group of paying customers. And I'm joined with our regular Monday co-host, Margaret McLean, all the way from the East Coast. Hi, Margaret. How are you doing?
Hi again. I'm great. Thank you.
Good, good, good. I'm glad to hear the sound of your voice in more ways than one. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Now, for most people who are used to the format of the show, this is the time, Water Cooler Monday, where you and the coach spend a little bit of time talking about things that are topical, talking about things that are in the news, in the headlines. So for those people tuning in who may have missed the entire segment of Water Cooler Monday, I want to talk about a couple of things with you, because you are an attorney, and get your take on some of the new laws that are being proposed out in the marketplace in the workplace today. But before I do, I just want to do a reset, because I've been listening to the show for years now, and I've really never heard a formal introduction of your background. So I just wanted to go through that with you, Margaret, because you do have quite an impressive resume built up over the years. You're an attorney, which Coach always talks about, and you're also an adjunct law professor over at Boston College's Carroll School of Management, and you specialize in business and constitutional law. So I'm going to talk to you a little bit about business law in just a minute, because I do have some questions. You are also a published author. You've written the book, it's a novel, Under Fire, and it features an arson and a murder trial in the book. You have a second novel that's going to be coming out just this year. It's titled Under Oath. When's that book coming out?
April 24th, and I just got a great Publishers Weekly review, so I'm very excited about that.
Oh, well, good for you, and congratulations.
Yeah.
You've also co-written a dramatic courtroom play based on this second novel, Under Oath, which is under development right now, and who knows, we may be seeing that on TV or in the movies sometime soon. You were born in Rome, New York. You graduated magna cum laude from Boston College, a very prestigious university back east. You also earned your law degree from Boston College Law, and then you practiced law in Essex County as the assistant district attorney in Lawrence, Massachusetts. You also practiced law as a civil litigation attorney for Hanover Insurance Corporation. You are the acting president of the Mystery Writers of America New England chapter. You volunteer in Boston's inner city schools teaching creative writing through a program called Write Boston. And most of you listening to the sound of our voice know you as the Monday co-host here on The Business of Life with Coach Ron Tunick. You live back east in Norwell, Massachusetts with your three children. You enjoy tennis, skiing, and windsurfing. So that's quite an impressive background that you've got there, counselor. I just wanted to get that out there, because I had not heard your full bio before. And it pales in significance compared to the accumulated law knowledge that you have built up over the years. And I want to talk to you about some of the laws that were in front of Congress just a short while ago, and of course have been retracted. The laws that I'm referring to are the SOPA and PIPA laws. SOPA and PIPA are acronyms. PIPA stands for the Protect Intellectual Property Act of 2011, and the SOPA stands for Stop Online Piracy Act in front of the House. And the implications of these laws, I mean, we saw perhaps one of the most interesting displays of democracy over the internet that we've ever seen with these two laws. So let's set the stage. What are the two laws, if you get into that for us, and talk to us about what the laws were hopefully intended to do, and then we'll talk about the ramifications of what happened after that.
Absolutely, a great topic. PIPA, first of all, is the bill in the Senate, and you mentioned the Protect Intellectual Property Act. It's sponsored by Marco Rubio, a Republican from Texas, and Senator Patrick Leahy from Vermont. And SOPA is the Stop Online Piracy Act, which is in the House. And the House bill was introduced on October 26, 2011. The object of the bill, and I quote, is, and this is the bill in the House, to promote prosperity, creativity, entrepreneurship, and innovation by combating the theft of U.S. property. So it's very interesting for people out your way, because we have the internet versus the movie industry and the music industry, all huge businesses in California.
They are. Now, these two laws would have packed California more than perhaps any other state in the union had they gone through. Well, now, the intent sounds good. I mean, Margaret, everybody wants to stop online piracy. We hate to think of some little Chinaman over in China who's making copies of the latest Bruce Springsteen record and making it available for 50 cents in his home country. That was the intent. However, it went terribly awry. What actually was contained in the bills that people were starting to find objectionable?
Well, first, the First Amendment was being trampled on. So the major players, proponents of the bill would be anybody trying to protect their intellectual property. And that would include me as an author, right? I don't want my book stolen online in some foreign country, right? So it's pirates from foreign countries who are causing the problem. So the biggest proponents, again, people in the movie industry, the music industry, but who's against it? That's what I find interesting. Google, Wikipedia, AOL, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, ACLU, MoveOn, even Tea Party patriots and over 4 million U.S. citizens who signed an online petition. And they're saying that the government has gone too far and is acting like Big Brother. So basically what happens is what the government wanted to do in these two bills is amounts to internet censorship, trampling on free speech. They include a private cause of action against service providers like Google, PayPal, opens them up to liability. And also, the AG, the Attorney General, can seek an injunction from federal court against a domain name used by a foreign pirate. So all of a sudden, this opens internet service providers and people with domain names to huge implications, both criminal and civil. So it opens up liability. Very interesting.
It is a very interesting law, and it was very nebulous in the way that it was written. As you said, a lot of people protested it. The most visible protests, however, is really democracy at work via the internet. And specifically, way back on January the 18th, three major companies, Wikipedia, Reddit, and Boing Boing, actually blacked out their websites for a 24-hour period to protest SOPA and PIPA. Google did something. It was sort of half-hearted. They censored its logo in protest, too, which was sort of
a black line. It was blacked out.
Yeah, but it was kind of a cheesy way to go about doing it, I think, in my opinion. But why did these companies feel compelled to protest by blacking out their website for an entire 24-hour period?
Well, look at how many times you use Google, though. I use Google multiple times a day for various reasons. I'm constantly on it, and so are a lot of Americans. So it just reminded you. It was a great reminder for me of, you know what, is the government going too far? And then Wikipedia, I teach law at BC, so many students research Wikipedia. Do you use it at all, Bill?
I use it every day in researching for the show and other things.
Right. Now, sometimes it's wrong, by the way, and we found it was very wrong in a legal issue the other day, but Wikipedia was shut down, so it was really strange not being able to use the English language version of Wikipedia on that particular day. I think it was effective because look what happened. As a result, those bills were put on the black burner, or the back burner.
Yes, they were.
Well, I think it was very effective.
It was. I mean, there's no question about it. There's no doubt that they were effective. So you can't argue the fact that they proved their point. They got Congress and they got the House and the Senate both to retract their bills. I guess the question is, though, this sort of online protesting, if you will, this is really the first collective bargaining action of the internet age. Do you think that this is the wave of the future? Is this the way that all protests and blackouts are going to happen in the future for people to get their way in the world?
Well, I think if it's such a big issue such as First Amendment rights, people really care about First Amendment rights, especially Google and certain internet bloggers. We don't want our internet censored by the government. We don't want to end up like countries like Iran, like China, where there's so much censorship going on. So I think it's also very important to authors. Even the movie makers had something to say. I attended a wonderful seminar this weekend. Actually, it was yesterday at the Harvard Business School for Media and Entertainment. So on the one hand, we had some major players in the movie industry. We had the COO of Chief Operations Officer of, it wasn't Sony Pictures, Paramount Pictures. We had the former CEO of MTV. They talked about this issue. So on the one hand, yes, it's very important to them that their movies and special intellectual property is not pirated. Yes, it's a problem. They lose money. However, they also feel very strongly about First Amendment free speech rights. So there, some of the executives were torn as well. They said, look, it was an important issue, and it needs to be addressed. That bill, it's an important bill, but they need to change it.
It does sound like some of the executives were conflicted. My guest is Margaret McLean. She's the co-hostess on Mondays here on The Business of Life, and we're batting around the SOPA and PIPA laws that were proposed in front of the House and the Senate. So no matter how you look at it, Margaret, you said this at the outset, setting it up. SOPA and PIPA are bad for California. I don't care how you look at it. They pitted our largest industries in the state against each other. The media industry down south, the record and the movie industry versus the technology industry and the internet up north. So it was basically a north versus south, Southern California versus Northern California battle.
Yeah.
To bring
Civil
it,
war in California.
Civil war in California. Don't think that it wouldn't have been either if these laws had gone forward. But let's bring it a little bit closer to home, because our own congressperson here, Elton Gallagher, who's a Republican in Simi Valley, said, and he's quoted in the newspapers as saying, that SOPA is needed to prevent piracy. He wanted the SOPA and PIPA laws to protect the films and the recordings. And so he was one that was backing this bill. He would have voted for it had the House not taken a step back and retracted that bill from its docket of things that they were taking up. My question to you is, you know, do old white guys really understand the internet and what's at stake here? Our own Elton Gallagher, who, bless his soul, is retiring at the end of this term, does he really have a grasp of what's going on? Did he understand how this was going to pit Northern California versus Southern California?
Well, I think that's a little bit of age discrimination, because some older people spend a lot of time, especially I know many authors who spend a lot of time navigating the internet, and they actually know more about the internet than I do. So I think it can work both ways. But it's very easy to, again, here we go, using the internet, we can use a search engine, we can Google some relevant articles about this issue and really look at both sides. That's the beauty of the internet. And when they start censoring that, when they start changing the way our searches work because they're worried about piracy happening in another country, gee, that really restricts our freedoms. It's like the Patriot Act of 2001, national security, which is very important, but there are restrictions to our freedoms, making it easier for the government to listen in on international calls or certain information you may get at your public library over the internet. It's all a restriction on privacy. So, you know, whether it depends on, I don't know if age is really an issue for me.
All right, and that may be fair, but I don't want to let go of this age thing too quickly either, because this is not necessarily an age discrimination thing, but it is a fact that most of the people serving in Congress are not of the digital generation. They are not what people call digital natives. They were born long before the digital revolution really happened. So can they really understand the facts? Do they have the knowledge to even hire advisors who understand the facts and can present the to them in a clear and cogent way? Because as we move forward, the lawmakers are going to have to at least keep pace with the technology, if not try to stay ahead of it.
Right. Well, they do have a lot of young interns working for them. I know that. It seems it's a low-paying or, in many cases, a zero-paying job. So who's willing to do that? Somebody that's young and doesn't have a family, perhaps college students. And I'll tell you, my students are very up on the internet. I've been learning a lot recently about social media and social networking over the internet, and there's so much to learn. But I do turn sometimes to those younger people to give me advice, including my daughter. So
we can only hope that our congresspeople and senators do the same thing. I'm talking to Margaret McLean. This is Water Cooler Monday here on The Business of Life, and we're just kicking it around. But I'm going to change gears, if I can, with you, Margaret, on a completely different subject, because you yourself are getting your own radio show here on KKZZ starting soon. Go ahead and tell us about it. What's the show going to be called? Give us kind of the 911 or the 411 on your show.
Well, it's got to be a 911, right? It's called It's a Crime Radio with host Margaret McLean. It's a radio page turner about law and crime. So as a former prosecutor, legal thriller author, and law professor, I'm using all those skills. I know how to keep people engaged. And this show is different because listeners will get forensics, detectives, FBI guys, authors, right? But they're going to be hooked on my fictional character named Charlie, who will come back each week facing a different dilemma. So people will tune in and follow the show online just to see what Charlie has gotten himself into this week. So, yeah, so I think that will make people come back. For example, I might talk about cybercrime, and I'll describe Charlie in the beginning, what he looks like. He may look, I'll say he's got long hair, ponytail, he's taking Advil for his neck, he's leaning over the computer. Charlie, oh, gee, this week he's a hacker, and I'll have my cybercrime expert on, perhaps somebody from the FBI, federal investigator. I'll say, first of all, how do we catch Charlie? We'll get into that. How do we catch hackers? I really don't know. So I know, but you may not know. So we'll follow that. And let's say we catch him, we throw him in federal prison. Well, that the next week I might say, have somebody from Attica on. So what is it like, or somebody who's been in federal prison? Charlie's in prison now. What can he expect? Can he negotiate? Can his attorney negotiate for him? Can he go to a country club prison? Or is he going to get the worst? So each week, I think people will love the fact that Charlie will be up to something different. And it'll be fun. What do you think?
I think it's going to be very interesting and extremely educational. Now, how many days a week are you going to be hosting the show?
Well, for now, it's just once a week on Thursdays at 1 o'clock. So I'll get the lunchtime traffic in California. But after that, I think if the popularity grows, I'll have a wonderful website for the show up and running by the time it gets going. There'll be a live chat so people can chime in about what they think Charlie's up to, how he can be catched. Maybe there's something else in forensics they want to ask the expert about. So it'll be really interactive, which that's what makes it different, too. And another interesting thing I will say, anybody who likes the show Dexter on Showtime, I think they're going to love this. I told you I was just at the Harvard Business School talking to some movie execs. I talked to one of the execs at Showtime, and I ran up to him and said, you know, I love this show, Dexter, and I told him about my show. He was so interested. He said, I said, well, gee, can I have some of the Dexter guys, maybe Dexter himself, on the show? He said, oh, that would be so much fun. It would be great for us to promote the season of Dexter. So anybody who likes Dexter, forensics, you're going to love this new show.
Oh, that is great. This is my guest. This is my co-host, Margaret McLean, talking about her new radio show going to be starting here on KKZZ soon. Going to be once a week on Thursdays. Margaret, it sounds very interesting, and as we get closer, I'm going to want more and more details from you as well.